Hello and welcome to the first episode of the Pop Papa Napcast. My name is TJ Deitch, I'll be your host. To give you a little information about me as we kick off here, I am a stay-at-home dad. I'm 30 years old. I live in Orange County, New York with my wife and daughter. I moved out here from Toledo, Ohio back in 2005 for work. And I have been a freelance writer since 2009. Our daughter was born in 2011 and is about 21 months old at this point. And that's about all you really need to know to kind of kick things off. About the show itself, in addition to kind of making a record of what I have experienced as a father up to this point and continuing on into the future, I also want to start a dialogue with other parents about the experience of being a parent, both stay at home and, you know, working. Because let's face it, no matter how you do it, this parenting thing is not always the easiest thing in the world. And I don't want this to be like a pity party or a complaint fest, but I do think it's important to have a place where we can bring up subjects that both make us smile and get on our nerves, because that's really what being a parent is all about, kind of balancing those two things and not letting the latter get in the way of the former too much. For example, my daughter, Lucy, is, like I said, 21 months old. She doesn't really have much of a nap schedule anymore. I used to be able to get her down at 11 and then again at 3 when she was much younger. And that time has just kind of moved back and back, and then the second nap fell away. And now, today, for instance, she didn't fall asleep until 3 o'clock. And while I wanted to initially have kind of a set schedule, I realized that she doesn't have a set schedule. She doesn't need one. And I don't really need one either because I have such a flexible schedule here at home. I do a regular group of writing in the beginning of the day, and then throughout the rest of the day, I kind of take care of other things, other assignments that I have. Those are less regular, but still kind of on a monthly cycle. At first, when she started changing her schedule, I got kind of out of sorts, because one thing about me that you should know and you'll kind of come to understand is that I can get really used to something really quickly, and I like patterns and I like routines. But babies don't always have patterns and routines, and once you figure out a pattern, they're probably going to change it on you and mix it up and start doing something else. And that's been the case with her and sleeping. Every few months, it seems to kind of move back and change and shift around. And then even within a week, you know, I'll have 4 days of 2 o'clock naps, and then one day of a 3 o'clock nap or an 11 o'clock nap or a noon nap. And it's, you know, you can't really predict these things because she's going through things that she can't tell me about because she can't talk yet. And she just doesn't understand what's going on. So some nights she sleeps better, some nights she doesn't. Some nights she naps really early, some nights she doesn't. Some days she just gets more tired than others because she's running around here like crazy, destroying our living room. And that's just how it is. And it took me a little while to kind of be okay with that and to kind of get used to the idea of change so quickly. And get used to the pattern of there not being a pattern, which kind of makes me feel a little bit better because I always look for patterns. Today, she did not seem to want to go to sleep at all. She wanted to watch Elmo, and she wanted to watch Mickey, and she wanted to watch me play Spider-Man, which I'll get to in a minute. And I did all those things, and we did all those things, and I was kind of doing work. Today was a little slow, so I'm a little bored, to be completely honest. And she just would not go down. I tried holding her while watching shows and playing the game, and she just was not into it. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, she goes and sits in this chair across from the couch that I kind of work at. It's kind of my home base. And I look at her, and she glances at me, her eyes flutter, and she closes them, and in a minute she's asleep. Fast asleep. And I'm able to pick her up and put her in her room. And it's just funny because you get so used to being the one that figures things out for them and does things for them that you forget that, like, the whole point of this life thing is for them to figure out how to do things for themselves. And it seems like an almost 2-year-old shouldn't be able to figure out when they want to go to sleep or just kind of sit down and go to sleep. But, I mean, she does it. And that's not something that usually happens, to be completely honest. Usually she needs to be kind of held, like, either by my wife or I, and then she'll kind of fall asleep. It's almost like she needs somebody to say, like, hey, it's okay, you can calm down and doze off. But today she did it herself, and so maybe it's the beginning of a new pattern. I don't know. But another aspect of the lack of pattern that I realized is that one time does not equal a change. This one time could have just been, hey, she's feeling crazy, or she's tired, or whatever. It's like I took this statistics class in high school, and while I don't remember a lot of it, one of the things I do remember is how we really don't understand the idea of odds in kind of a general way. Like, what are the odds of blah, blah, blah? But you can figure things out like that. And at this point, that particular piece of information, that piece of data, if you will, is an outlier because it's a weird thing that happened and we don't know if it's going to happen again. But I'm going to keep an eye on it and see if that is the new pattern because that would be fantastic. I mentioned before playing Spider-Man, I should explain that in a little bit more detail. See, a couple months ago, I showed my daughter the 1967 Spider-Man cartoon that's on Netflix and she got pretty into it. She had recognized the character from a coffee mug that I have and these like sleep pants that I have with a bunch of Marvel characters. And she's like, oh, Spider-Man. And so I figured that would be a good start because, I mean, it couldn't be too offensive or crazy or loud or violent or anything like that. And so she got into it for about a week. And then after that, anytime I'd turn Netflix on and after her, she asked for Spider-Man, she would instead change her mind and go with Mickey or a Sesame Street episode, which is fine. I mean, I appreciated being able to kind of mix things up a little bit instead of watching the same couple of things all the time. But, you know, she's a kid. That's kind of what they do. But then for my birthday, I got a Spider-Man video game, The Amazing Spider-Man for Xbox 360, based on the movie that came out last year that I did not see. She actually likes watching me play that more than she seemed to like the cartoon. And it's funny because she'll ask for it and she knows that it's a game because she'll hand me the controller or the video game box or something along those lines and ask for Spider-Man. And so she gets a kick out of watching me swing around and kind of knock out bad guys. I'm a little concerned about the violence, but it's not too bad. And to be honest, I don't think she pays that much attention anyway. She's kind of usually doing something else while it's on. That's been kind of fun. At the same time, though, I gotta say, like, I use video games as kind of an outlet, you know? If there's been a bad day, it's kind of nice to beat up some pixelated people and kind of get some aggression out. And I gotta say that being told to play video games by an almost 2-year-old kind of takes a little bit of the fun out of it. I mean, I'm still doing it, and I still like that game a lot, but it's just one of those things that I've noticed. Speaking of Netflix, my daughter is a gigantic Disney Channel fan. She loves Mickey Mouse Clubhouse, Doc McStuffins, Jake and the Neverland Pirates, and then she's even gotten into the live-action shows, especially Jesse and Good Luck Charlie. Those are the two live-action ones she seems to have really taken to. Oh, and she also likes Phineas and Ferb, which is good because my wife and I actually watched that before our daughter was born because it is a fantastic cartoon. Anyway, the only piece of Mickey Mouse animation that's on Netflix Instant is this, I think, an hour-long special called the Mickey Mouse Clubhouse Road Rally. She's watched it so many times now that she actually knows the words to parts. I mean, she can't necessarily say them exactly word for word, but I can hear her doing her kind of baby talk, grumbly, cooey voice thing along with the words in the same cadence and rhythm that they're being said on the show. And that is adorable. I'm trying to get it on video with my phone, but it's harder to capture than I anticipated. And I'm sure, like a lot of parents, I have a ton of videos on my iPhone that are either right after something cute happened or right before, because you try the first time, you miss it, you keep rolling, they don't do anything, you hit stop, and then right after that, they do the thing that you wanted them to do. So that's been my experience with video, especially. And speaking of video, another thing that she's kind of done lately is we taught her how to do bump it, where you know, bump the fist bump, because it's adorable. And we have a cat named Milo, who is not super interested in the baby or anything that having to do with her, but he has gotten a little bit less freaked out by her and will kind of let her come up and pet him and hug him a little bit before he runs away. The other day he was sitting on the table and she was right there with my wife and she kept reaching out her fist and saying, bump it, bump it, bump it. And I mean, of course he's a cat, so he didn't do it, but that's another thing I'm trying to capture on video or photo, and it's like my white whale right now. But I'll let you know how that goes. While Lucy's still asleep and I still have a little time to record, I want to give out the Pop Pop a seal of approval for this week. This time, it is the Leapfrog My Pal Violet. Now, this is a stuffed dog that has different sensors on its stomach and paws. All four of them. One of them plays songs with lyrics. One of them plays kind of nighttime songs that you can set how much time you're going for. One is kind of an off button. And then the other two are talking in different sounds. And what's cool about this toy is that you can actually plug it into your computer and customize it. There are a certain number of songs in the database, and you can choose which 5 or 6 or whatever it is that you want it to sing when your kid hits the button. And the cool thing about that is at least one of the songs is customizable, where you can put in the kid's name, their favorite food, their favorite color, and their favorite animal. So it's neat that there's so much play value in this toy. You can kind of change it up if your kid seems to be getting bored. But the neatest thing for me has been watching Lucy actually be able to memorize songs and the patterns that the songs come in on this thing. So she knows the words to the songs now, and she has for a while. My wife switched it up a few months back, and she's learned some of the new songs, both from this bear and from other things that she has that play like Twinkle Twinkle Little Star and that kind of thing. So this toy definitely gets the Pop Papa seal of approval easily. She's got a few other toys that kind of talk and sing songs, and they're either super annoying or just kind of whatever. This is the best of the bunch. We gave one of these to our friend of ours who was having her second baby, and she told us recently that she actually had to buy a second one for her kid. The older one's only a year older. And so now they both have them. Like I said, it's the Leapfrog My Pal Violet. There's a boy version named Scout that's also available. He's in green. I'm looking at the Amazon page right now, and I'll have a link to this in the show notes. But it looks like there's two different versions. I think there's a slightly newer version that looks a little cartoonier, because according to the site, one My Pal Scout is $25, while the other one is $43.55. So I'm guessing that they're kind of phasing one out and bringing the other one back in, which is fine. And then these characters, kind of like the Play School dog, these characters are on a lot of different things. Sorry, the Fisher Price dog, which is in like everything they put out for babies. This dog is in different Leapfrog learning programs and things like that. So it's kind of a character that they can get to know as babies and stick with as they grow older, which can either be like a neat thing for them or an obvious corporate way to develop an emotional attachment to a toy. But I'm not super negative or cynical like that, even though that's probably the case. While we're talking about things that get a thumbs up, a huge thumbs up has to go to Unitech Composites and Structures. Why? What is this company? I have no idea what the company is, but they took a stand and fired massive, let's keep it clean and calm, a jerk face, Joe Ricky Hundley. Now, I don't know if you heard about this guy. He's 60 years old, a CEO businessman type guy, and he's on a plane sitting next to a woman and her baby who's like 18 months old, 19 months old. And this guy is drunk, and he gets mad when the baby starts crying and freaking out. He apparently drops the N-word in reference to the baby, and then later on slaps the kid when he won't stop crying on descent. Like, can you believe this guy? You know who it's worse for when a baby's crying? The mother, for one thing, because she is worried about her kid. And two, the baby, jerkwad. The baby's freaking out because it doesn't know what's happening. It doesn't know why these things are happening to its body and why its ears are popping and what the heck is going on, because you can't explain things to a baby. So I'm sorry that it was mildly inconvenient for you, Mr. Hundley, to have a baby crying next to you, but that kid was out of its mind freaking out because it had no idea what was going on. Now, this guy claims that he had nothing to do with it. He claims that he didn't say the N-word, and he claims he didn't hit the kid. But, I mean, how can you really fight this one? There's an entire plane filled with people, and you know who everybody's looking at on an airplane, if they're looking anywhere but straight forward or at their phone? Is it the crying baby? Now, look, I've traveled with the baby. We got really lucky because she was not freaking out. But she freaked out in the airport, man. She was running around like crazy, and her flight got delayed. But my biggest fear the whole time was that something would happen and she would freak out. Luckily, didn't happen, and I was super relieved. But this guy, again, Joe Ricky Hundley, who deserves public shaming for the rest of his life, if not jail for the rest of his stupid life, should get a big slap in the face, if not worse. Okay, that's the angriest part of the show, I promise. Hey everybody, I'm back. Lucy's down for a nap, so I get to record some more, which is always fun. I feel like I got a good flow going yesterday, which is a relief, because before this episode that you're hearing now, I've actually recorded almost like 2 hours of trial podcast episodes, and they did not go well. I had problems focusing on what I wanted to say, I had some technical issues, and while I haven't figured quite everything out about this whole thing, I feel like I do have a better idea of what I want to do and what my focus is. And another thing that I realized is that I don't need to give you everything about me right away. I had these long introductions about who I am and where I came from and all this stuff. And while I think that is important and that has all built to who and what I am now, I don't need to front load all that stuff. There's the old writer's trick of show, don't tell. And so I will show as I go and bring you up to speed when it makes sense. Anyway, one subject I wanted to talk about, again, briefly from yesterday's recordings, was the idea of Lucy falling asleep so late in the day. Like I said, it was 3 o'clock then, and she actually fell asleep on her own in the chair, which was fantastic. But the problem that I have with her falling asleep so late is that it throws off a lot of the things that I tend to do while she naps. There's only a few things that I can only do while she naps, and that's shower, because I don't know what she'll do out here by herself, or if she'll want to jump in, which is fine, but it's very difficult to handle a wet baby when you're trying to shower. I think anybody can agree with that. And just a few work things that I can't do. I also can't record the podcast. So the later in the day it gets that she finally goes down for a nap, it's like, oh, I've only got this much time, and then I need to start cooking dinner at 5, and it feels a lot more rushed. I'm curious what my fellow stay-at-home parents have to say about this subject, because I wonder about how other people deal with routines and the shifting routines of babies. So after you listen to this episode, or while you're listening, head over to poppapa.com, that's poppapa.com, and leave some comments in this show episode post. I'm curious to hear what you have to say about, like, what your kids did for naps, and maybe ways that you helped get them down. Today, she actually fell asleep on her own again on a different chair, which was fantastic. So, like I was talking statistics yesterday, 2 data points that are similar is actually a pattern and not just craziness. So maybe this is a new thing. I mean, she fell asleep much earlier today than she did yesterday. But maybe the actually, like, letting herself calm down, slow down, and doze off is a great thing. And another reason that I don't get super strict about making her go to sleep at a certain time is that I actually used to have a lot of problems with this exact thing. When I was a kid, I have always been a night owl. I was up until I started getting up with the baby. And even then, it took like a whole year for me to become, I wouldn't say more of a morning person, but at least less of a night owl. I just can't stay up as late as I used to. But when I was a kid, I used to have a really hard time falling asleep because I would just lay there. Well, occasionally I get super sleepy. You know, when you go to school and you're on this schedule that's really not your own, it's one that somebody else figured out for you, it can be difficult because, hey, if you're not tired and you're supposed to go to your room and sit there with your eyes closed and eventually fall asleep, like, and it doesn't come easy for you, that's tough. And it can be difficult and stressful because you're like, well, I don't have to fall asleep. I don't really feel like if you don't feel like you want to do anything else except for, like, maybe be up and watch TV or whatever, and you're just sitting there and lying, it made me so anxious and I hated that feeling. Now that I'm a freelance writer and I can kind of set my own schedule, I don't have to do that anymore. I mean, I go to sleep when I'm tired, which is fantastic. And some days that's early, like 11. Some days that's late, like last night I went to bed around 1 or 12:30 or something. And before the baby came along, man, I would get up around 10 or 11. I would work and I would go to sleep between 2 and 3 usually. So, I mean, that's kind of where I feel like my natural state is. And I feel like Lucy's kind of starting to find her natural state. She likes to get up between 7 and 8. Between 6 and 7. That was the old days. I wish it was 7 and 8. And she likes to watch Sesame Street and she likes to watch Disney. This is her routine now. And then she likes to go down for a nap between like 1 and 3. And I mean, I have no reason for her to not do that. I don't have a real reason. I think a lot of parents just kind of set these rules that are kind of arbitrary or like what they think the kid needs. But I mean, you got to remember, like, these kids aren't just robots that need to be told what to do. They're growing people. They're trying to figure out what their life is going to be like. And just like you're not like your parents, your kid's not going to be just like you, even if you set out all these strict rules. Sometimes they'll follow them. Sometimes when they get away from you, they're going to freak out and forget all of them and do almost the exact opposite. So that's kind of where I stand. While it does get stressful at times, for sure, when like I just want to take a shower. I just need her to go to bed so I can get some work done. And the one time where I really do need her to fall asleep at a certain time is when I happen to schedule a phone interview for a day for my job. Most of the interviews I do are via emails, so I can work on them when I need to, and it's more convenient for everybody. But a phone interview, you know, you've got a set time. You dial the person up and you call and you talk to them. You ask them questions, and it can take anywhere from, you know, 10 to, I've had hour-long interviews, and those can be great and they probably make for better stories, but the truth is that they also take a lot more time and you don't get paid any differently for doing a phone interview, which involves transcribing. That's what takes more time. But for me, it's extra difficult because I've got to figure out when Lucy's going to go to sleep. And like I've said, these last couple months have been even harder to figure out than before. I used to be able to, you know, nail an interview down between like noon and 1 and I'd be able to hit it. And now it's like, I don't know. Luckily, everybody's been wanting to do email So I'm sure I'm going to have some phoners coming up, and I'm really got to figure out how to deal with them. She might be fine if I just do them in the room with her. She does okay when I talk on the phone, but other times she wants to, like, crawl all over me and grab my phone, so who knows. We'll kind of see what happens. But maybe we're in a new pattern. Maybe she's starting to put herself down for a nap when she's tired, and then I put her in her crib and go about our day, and maybe it's just shifted later to between 1 and 3. She's figuring it out, I'm figuring it out, and we're just going to kind of have to do that together. Another question I want to pose to you listeners is in regards to technology. Now, this is a subject that is pretty unique to our generation and our kids' generation because, you know, I didn't have cell phones when I was a kid. I remember when my dad got his first cell phone, I was probably in like 5th or 6th grade, and it was like the craziest thing in the world. It was one of those flip-down ones, and I had a ton of fun with it. But obviously, you couldn't do all the stuff you can do now. My wife and I both have Kindle Fires, and we both have iPhones. Of course, I've got a laptop. She's got a netbook, though she doesn't use it much, but she's got a work laptop that she uses. And it's really difficult to kind of figure out when they can get involved with this technology. I won't let her touch my computer as best I can, and I won't let her touch my phone. But my wife started letting her play with her phone when she was younger, and so there's less of a rule there. With me, if she sees my phone, every now and then she'll grab it and take it and play with it. And I can tell because like every single game in my menu has been opened, which is kind of funny. But my wife had an iPod Touch before we got our iPhones, and we've given that kind of to Lucy and gotten some kid games and stuff like that. And she plays with that every now and then. I try to limit her how much time she spends with it because she can get obsessed, just like anybody can, just playing with the phones. But it's on one hand, it's interesting how easily kids understand this touch technology. Like, it just makes sense to them. And I don't know if that's because it's just really easy technology to understand, or if it means that they're just being introduced to a different kind of technology so young that they're going to understand technology in a completely different way than we do. I think it's probably both, actually. So I'm curious how you guys deal with touch devices and kids. I've heard some people get iPads for their kids for Christmas when they're just young toddlers, which seems crazy to me because I don't even have an iPad. But I mean, that kind of money just doesn't flow around me very much. The other thing is that one of the main reasons I don't let her touch my phone is it's not like we have a ton of money to just replace these things. So if she drops my phone and cracks it, like, I'm going to have to buy a new one, and that's a couple $100 that I'm out, or whatever they cost now. And I don't want to have to spend that money. So for me, it was kind of preventative. I don't want to have to spend this extra money. And I also don't want to have that anger towards her, because obviously I'm not going to be like as mad at her as I would be at somebody if they deliberately stole or broke my phone. But at the same time, like, you respond however you're going to respond to things. And those emotions can get kind of tricky and tied in with people in weird ways. And I don't want to have those emotions towards her. So if I can separate a thing that might lead to that, then I'm going to. And that's what I did. But there's obviously a lot of opinions on this. I am curious because, like I said, we are kind of in Brave New World territory when it comes to these things. And so I'm just curious what you have to think. So leave some comments about that and the napping thing, and hopefully we can get a cool dialogue going, and I will read some of the answers on next week's episode. All right, I want to give the Pop Papa of the Week award to Richard Castle, star of the ABC drama Castle, as played by Nathan Fillion. If you're not familiar with this series, it stars Fillion as Richard Castle. He's an author along the lines of, like, James Patterson. And he follows NYC detective Kate Beckett on cases, and it's supposed to be information so that he can use for his next book. It's been going on for several seasons now. He's a single father. Her mom ran off and is doing something, so it's pretty much him. There's a romantic relationship with Beckett. All this stuff kind of goes on. In the most recent episode, while he's trying to let his daughter go off and be free and do her own thing in college, the worst case scenario happens and she actually gets kidnapped. It's kind of a Taken type thing. And since Castle has access to the police, he's more involved in trying to find her than, you know, he normally would be. The episode really did a lot with being a parent and how that can affect you. Because there's that saying that, you know, your kid is a little piece of you living out in the real world, outside your body, that you can't protect all the time. And that's what this episode is really about at its core. He had given her space to do her own thing. He wasn't calling as much. He wasn't checking her video blog thing. And in that time, She wound up getting kidnapped along with another girl. And that's just such worst case scenario type stuff. He switches immediately from, you know, this being just another case that he's trying to figure out. He still wants to help these people, but he doesn't have a personal investment, to being like, I have to do this. And you can really see on Fillion's face, he's going through the stuff. If you're a parent, you can at least kind of get in that headspace. Oh my God, what would happen if my kid got kidnapped or taken or whatever? Part of it's like a deadpan look in some cases, and part of it's rage, and part of it's sadness. And it's all kind of mixed up, and he goes from one to the other, just like you would in real life, which I think is perfect. And that's why I think he's really good in that series, even if the series is kind of your run-of-the-mill procedural most of the time. When it does these episodes along these lines, he can really shine, and he's a great actor. I think he should be in a lot more stuff. Speaking of the rage portion of this kind of experience, there's a part where a guy knows some information. He's in the hospital, and Castle is left alone because he's, you know, his friends are cops, and obviously that's not legal, but they leave him in there. Castle tries to appeal to his nature, his good nature, this guy, and he says no. He says, screw you. And then they just cut to outside of the room where the cops are standing, and you just hear this guy scream, and then a few minutes later, Castle comes out, and he says that he appealed to his human side to get the information, which is clearly not the case. And as much as I like to think of myself as the kind of person who would not resort to violence and would like to follow the letter of the law to the best of my ability, if put in that kind of situation, I think you're actually in a mind space that is over law. I think that's natural law. Safety of your children is one of your primary things when you're a parent. It's built into you. It's not there all the time. It's not there before you have parents. It's not there before you have kids, I mean. But it's there, and it's a thing, and it's primal. And I think in that case, you do what you gotta do. I would do that. So for such a good performance, for balancing all those things, all those emotions, and doing it so well, I give the pop-pop of the week to Richard Castle. The best part is that it's a two-parter, so we'll kind of see how things wind up next week. He's going to Paris, and he's going to try and do his thing, and maybe his dad shows up. I don't really know. A lot's going on. They always do like one two-episode event a year, and it's usually like a big crazy thing, so curious to see how that winds up, even though I'm not like the biggest fan of that show. I tend to read comics during it, but this one really got me, and it's all on Fillion because he's awesome. All right, gang, I think I've taken up enough of your time today. I hope you enjoyed the first episode of the Pop Papa Napcast. If you want to check out more about me, you can go to poppapa.com. That's, once again, poppapa.com. I'm also at United Monkey, where monkey is spelled monkee.com. That's my pop culture blog. Or if you're curious to see what I've been cooking lately, you can head over to Monkeying Around the Kitchen, all one word, no spaces, everything spelled normally. I'm also on Twitter at Papa Deitch. That's PoppaDeitsch. And I think that's about it. Again, head on over to the website, drop some comments, leave some questions. Maybe that'll help spark some discussion for next week. And until then, I remain TJ Deitch.